This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Maybe only a couple of years before American skies are open to unmanned aerial vehicles. Drones aren't just for war zones anymore. Local law enforcement agencies across the country, including a couple in North Carolina, are experimenting with them. And enthusiasts say their commercial uses could be nearly endless. North Carolina wants to be at the forefront of the coming drone boom, and that has some folks excited and others worried. Joining me to tell us more is Kyle Snyder, director of the Next Gen Air Transportation Center at NC State University. Kyle, welcome.
Good. Thanks for having me, Frank.
Tell us more about Next Gen Air Transportation Center. What is it? What do you do?
So this was a center started in 2008 with funding from North Carolina Department of Transportation to help North Carolina get ready for airspace modernization. Really, where are we going to increase more and safer air traffic? New airplanes, more airplanes, very light jets, business jets, much like the Honda aircraft being built over in Greensboro. How can we get the state ready for that? We've been working on that since 2008, about a year ago. The state wanted to do more to get ready for unmanned aircraft systems. And so they brought me in to kind of help lead that effort, and that's really where we're focusing our efforts these days.
And unmanned is only part of it, as you suggest. There's a lot of changes in aviation. People in North Carolina figured out that there is an industry in that. We better get out ahead of it, and so there you are, right?
We've got a history in aviation, a small role in that in that legacy. So, yes, we're trying to continue to grow for that.
Now, what about the focus in unmanned vehicles? What prompted that?
Really, the growth of the industry we're seeing, not just nationally, but across the globe, with more companies, more development, the need for more education, and how UAS and autonomous systems, students that have those kind of backgrounds are getting degrees or getting jobs in all kinds of locations. So the state said, you know, we need to be prepared for that. We've got great airspace. We've got great academic research capabilities. We've got a local user base already with our military footprint that we already have. But we also have the opportunity for commercial development. Our state is very geographically diverse. Whether you're going from the coast up through the mountains, there's a lot of opportunity there for research for various applications. So North Carolina Department of Transportation, Department of Commerce, the governor's offices all got together and said, we want to make this happen. Let's use the center we already have at NC State to kind of pull together those resources.
So let's talk about the research that you're already involved in. What are you looking at in terms of unmanned vehicles?
The FAA right now is really looking at better understanding how to do safe airspace integration. NC State has done a lot of work for the last 25 years with a senior design class in the aerospace engineering program, making new UAVs. And developing new technologies for that. We're looking at now how do we grow from that knowledge to integrate them into various applications, not just military, but also looking at public safety, agriculture. Agriculture is a big one. We did our first flight under a certificate of authorization, the FAA approval for flying, just last Thursday at Hyde County Airport to start collecting agriculture-related research.
Hyde County, we're back where it all started, or pretty close, huh?
About an hour away from the Wright brothers, yes, sir.
Well, tell us more. So tell us about that. Actually, I should take one step back. You're doing some research. You say you got a permit. So what does it take now to fly these things? There is not blanket permission to be flying these kind of vehicles at the moment.
That's correct. There is not blanket permission. The FAA is not prepared to open these for commercial services yet. That is looking at a 2015-2016 window. So right now, public agencies are the only ones allowed to fly. Public agencies are public safety. Their value to the public is inherent. And universities that are doing research to support safe integration. So that is our role. We are going through this process. We worked with the FAA and said, here's a aircraft that we want to fly. Here's the box we will fly it in, the location, right around the Hyde County Airport. No people. Very minimal traffic. We didn't see an airplane while we were out there flying on Thursday at all. And a particular mission. So our mission is the research. Let's capture agriculture-related imagery.
And anybody who wants to fly one of these, if they're among those groups that are now given permission, has to, on a case-by-case basis, file that kind of application.
You have to go through that process. It says this bird in this location, and an FAA will take around 60 days or so to process that application.
Okay, and so you talked about agriculture for one of the domestic uses. So tell us about that. How would you use drones in that application?
Given North Carolina's large agriculture population, we think we've got a lot of opportunities for research here. Corn, soybeans, wheat, tobacco, also looking at herds, cattle, pigs. aerial imagery is incredibly valuable. Right? We've known that for a long, long time, whether that was airplanes, balloons, just, you know, stand on a ladder kind of thing. If we can do that, capture imagery now on a routine basis, whether that is a service fee or can we put technologies now into farmers' hands like a tractor? You know, here's a small UAV that you can go fly yourself. We want to do that research that says, if I can give you imagery, infrared, multispectral, that can pull off the health of a crop and look at, is it infested? Do you have enough water, enough nitrogen? And you can pull that out of data these days really pretty easily with the right tools. If you can look at that weekly, how does that improve your yields? If you can say, I've got an infestation now in the northwest corner of my field, can I quarantine that, take care of it, and improve my yields by 2 or 3%?
And this is showing up maybe earlier than it might meet the eye because we're using infrared or other kinds of tomography or image making that show this stuff before I might see it with the eye.
Exactly. That's why NC State is so well positioned to support this growth, because it's not just about making a new airplane, making a new sensor, but also our crop sciences department is intimately involved in everything we're doing and have helped out with that. Potato blight supposedly shows up 5 days before the human eye can see it on an infrared camera.
So, but the other thing is, I mean, you can still use that kind of technology on manned aircraft, right? I mean, there's nothing in particular about an unmanned craft except for maybe the expense. What would be the advantage of using
it? It is the expense and the routine availability of it. If I can have a little helicopter that's maybe 2 or 3 feet in diameter, weighs a couple of pounds, and has a camera on it that I can go fly for pennies or dollars on an hour versus bringing a manned system in right now like you would an aerial applicator. And then we're looking at some of that kind of application too. Can we now target spray an infestation now with an unmanned helicopter instead of bringing in a big bird? And that's some of the benefits that Japan has already seen with using these for crop spraying.
I was going to say, it seems to me like all of the technology must be available to be able to produce these things. I mean, you must know enough about that, what it takes to fly, what it takes to fly remotely, and what it takes to to apply sensors to these things. So are you looking at developing better craft, or are we now looking at ways to fly them safely and sort of air traffic rules and all of that?
All of the above. Primarily my interest and through the transportation research group that I'm part of at NC State, we are really looking at that airspace integration, the safe operations of it. But I get to work with the aerospace department to make a purpose-built aircraft. What is the optimal design for flying a sensor? We also get to work with the ECE department to say, what are the ideal sensors for flying this? How can I tell the difference between a sick cow and a healthy cow? Some of the infrared cameras right now will do a 2 degrees Celsius differentiation. Is that good enough? Do we need to fly? What altitudes? Comes back to the research on what are the application, what are the operational windows.
And obviously, you could never just ask the cow. So we do need some kind of technology. And part of what's happening here with your project at NextGen Air Transportation is that you are working also to develop some of the regulations, both in terms of air safety and some of the privacy concerns that we might have. That's part of the project as well?
That is a key part of the project. In addition to the technology development, also the education programs, working with Elizabeth City State and maybe our community college system, the policies for safely and appropriately, responsibly integrating these technologies cannot be overlooked. The FAA needs this data. Industry needs this data. The standards manufacturers need this data. So we are certainly addressing that and pulling together the local resources for that.
What about that? And first of all, I should probably point out that you don't like this word drone. That we're going to continue to use, but you won't.
I will.
Tell us about drone and what you don't like about it.
I know what drone immediately pops into most people's heads when they hear that word. They're thinking of the big militarized, weaponized platforms like a Predator or a Reaper. I'm very familiar with those systems. I know what their capabilities are. That is the one that gets most of the press. Whereas most of the birds that are flying, if you look at per count, we're talking about small UAS, unmanned aircraft systems. And the system connotation brings in the human operator, the human analyst that's looking at the data these things are bringing back. It talks about the intelligence that's actually put into the system so that it isn't just launched off on a mission mindlessly doing what it's supposed to do. They are dynamically adapting to their environment, meeting that operator, that user's intent. This is what I ask you to do. Go do that. And they work together. It is a cooperative system.
So they have some more benign uses than the word drone suggests, and they're a heck of a lot more interesting than the word drone suggests. But what do you say to people who are worried about the dark side, the possible use of these in terms of surveillance and the way in which they might intrude on our privacy? I mean, what do you say to those folks?
We are working on a policy statement for responsible operations in the state of North Carolina, working with the state legislature for how to integrate those, working with NC State's legal department to say what is appropriate here, how can we develop this across the state, to work with our law enforcement agencies and say this is what we think responsible operations need to be like in the state. We are working on the test site to evaluate some of those capabilities and what is appropriate. So it is appropriate to be concerned about that. We certainly will not downplay that. But there are bigger data management issues that need to be considered too. Just like who regulates the video cameras that are downtown Durham, downtown mm-hmm. Raleigh, downtown Charlotte? Who's watching those? Who determined that those were ready to go? So we know there's some of those bigger issues. So we're trying to better track the privacy concerns.
Well, we will talk about some of those bigger issues and the technology as our conversations about drones continues in North Carolina. Kyle Snyder, director of the Next Gen Air Transportation Center at NC State. Just ahead, we're going to hear about the first drone legislation introduced into this legislature in North Carolina. We will talk about fears that unmanned surveillance vehicles might pose in the state and ways in which they're being addressed, all on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, the broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay tuned. This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Today we're talking about unmanned aerial vehicles. You may know them as drones. They're not just for the battlefield anymore, increasingly being flown domestically for all kinds of purposes. And North Carolina may soon be a hub for drone research, development, and production. With me in the studio is Kyle Snyder, director of the Next Gen Air Transportation Center at NC State. And joining us now on the phone are Sarah Preston, Policy Director with the American Civil Liberties Union of North Carolina, and Tyler Wall, Assistant Professor in the School of Justice Studies at Eastern Kentucky University. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks for having us.
Sure thing. Sarah, let me start with you. First piece of legislation focused specifically on drones has been introduced in the North Carolina House of Representatives. Tell us about that bill.
Sure. Well, it's House Bill 312, Preserving Privacy Act of 2013. It was introduced a couple weeks ago and has broad bipartisan support. And what it's aiming to do is regulate the use of drones specifically for surveillance. So a lot of the things we just heard about, these other uses that might be legitimate governmental uses or even possibly private uses, would not really be regulated by this bill. But what it would do is require that if law enforcement is going to use a drone to collect evidence against a person or just to surveil individuals, they would have to go ahead and get a warrant.
And that's because, I mean, the fact is that there's nothing an unmanned vehicle can do that a staffed or piloted vehicle can do. And so really the question is making sure that somehow the rules that apply to all the old technology apply to this new technology. I mean, is that what you're saying?
Well, it is a new technology, and it's actually sort of different from a lot of other technologies like helicopters or other, you know, surveillance devices, in that it's much cheaper and probably it's going to be much more prevalent. And they're also smaller and can maneuver into places where a helicopter couldn't go. They can be virtually silent. So instead of having people on notice that they're being surveilled from above, a citizen wouldn't even have any idea potentially that a drone is, you know, hovering outside their window or something like that. So certainly if that's the kind of use that law enforcement might choose to put these drones to, they should be required to abide by regular constitutional principles and get a warrant to surveil individuals.
And Tyler, how are drones making the way into local law enforcement?
Well, it's really increasing. You see a lot of interest with law enforcement agencies wanting drones, and they've basically kind of framed them as kind of a silver bullet technology that can kind of assist the police in a variety of, you know, different missions. And if you, you know, read the reports of what they say the drone can do or what type of mission it can assist the police in, it's virtually, you know, limitless. So they see this as a key tool, as they often say, to kind of better assist the police in kind of public safety measures.
Well, how about that? I mean, we all want safe streets. If they have a better tool and it's cheaper, shouldn't we just go forward with that and make sure that the safeguards are in place, Tyler?
Well, definitely. I think that's part of the conversation of the safeguards. I think the question for me and many others is are we really slowing down, really deliberating what are the possible consequences? Because any technology doesn't just have necessarily intend, you know, it doesn't always do what it's intended. There's also unintended consequences as well. And so, you know, I think this is part of the thing that we have to be somewhat, you know, conscious of is this public safety discourse.
Kyle, that poses an interesting question for you, it seems to me, as somebody who does research. In a sense, you can't slow down the research, or can you? How do you work in tandem? How do you say, look, I don't, if you believe that Tyler's point is a good one, that we need to be deliberate as we're developing the technology, is there a practical way to do that?
The way the FAA is looking at it right now, and our approach here too, is full disclosures. We are flying, and we are making it publicly aware of when we're flying from a research perspective. But the projects that we want to fly for, the research we want to conduct, isn't just about the technology development, it is about the application. So we are working with North Carolina Department of Public Safety, the Department of Justice. Even the federal Department of Justice is very integrated with the UAS activities, with the FAA. There are many committees, research groups that are looking at what are the appropriate measures for putting in the privacy concerns, but also what would be the applications, what are the things we want to do, how would public safety agencies use these. So it is a collaborative effort, I would say, across departments. And that's what kind of makes it fun with what North Carolina is trying to do, of do it all holistically.
Sarah, the ACLU of North Carolina has sent information requests along the lines of transparency. You sent requests to dozens of local law enforcement agencies about not just drones, but all kinds of military equipment and tactics. What are your concerns, and are you getting any kind of response?
We've started to get responses in, and you know, we're beginning to review all of those. Our concerns, I think, there are a few different concerns. One is just that people don't know what's going on. There is sort of federal support and actually probably encouragement up till fairly recently for local law enforcement to get a hold of military equipment that's designed for combat. And law enforcement is now using that equipment to, you know, for general crime fighting, general, you know, crowd control, those kinds of things. And our concern is to what degree is that making our community subject to more aggressive policing tactics? And is it endangering people who are not doing anything wrong, just endangering members of our community? And so we're trying to find out exactly what is going on. But, you know, there was a lot of sort of, I guess I'll call it a trade between the federal government and local law enforcement, where the military was actually giving old military equipment, you know, billions of dollars worth of equipment down to local law enforcement. And we'd like to know which police departments in North Carolina have this equipment and how it's being used, how it's being regulated.
And of course, as our military commitments draw down in Iraq and then Afghanistan, there's more of this stuff available. And of course, the capacity to build, and these industries don't like to just go away. So Tyler, this militarization of local police forces, is it a new thing, or is it the latest step in a trend? How do you see it?
It's definitely not a new thing. I think the drone is getting, you know, the and rightfully so, the attention. But no, this is the relationship between the police and the military goes back, you know, ages. From some of the first police chiefs had military backgrounds, and then, you know, in the 60s and 70s with civil unrest and political protest, you saw the development of SWAT teams, and then of course that morphed into the war on crime and the war on drugs, where you really started to see with the Military Cooperation and Law Enforcement Act from Reagan in 1981, you started to see this transfer that Sarah talks about. And then, of course, we're now in the moment of Department of Homeland Security and the war on terrorism. That's, you know, so I would describe this kind of, you know, drones, you kind of need to situate within kind of this intensification of a much longer historical process that's been developing.
And you have written about this worry that you and many others have, that when you raise the word security, our attention span seems to shrink and our need to move faster, and all in the context of a conversation about how can we slow this down to be deliberate. But you're suggesting that whenever we use the word security, sometimes that kind of deliberation goes out the window.
Yeah, that's one of my kind of central arguments, is that, you know, security has become this dominant logic, and it can basically justify all kinds of measures, and it pushes things through. So in the case of drones, you see two kind of logics operating, with the FAA, you know, relaxing FAA regulations, and it's basically profit and security. You know, it's done in the name of security and in the name of technological development or industry. The concern then is, you know, how is that speeding up the process without us as a society really deliberating and really thinking through in a very sincere, kind of rigorous way the possible complications and what type of society we're bringing into the future.
And to what extent do you think this kind of militarization, I mean, in a way is pushing the industrial uses and industrial applications means there's a lot of money. So does it, do you think, push the argument for developing these new technologies?
Yeah, and I'm specifically thinking of the unmanned, you know, we have a congressional caucus, the Unmanned Systems Caucus, that, you know, basically their sole purpose is to basically government to facilitate industry by opening up civilian markets for drone manufacturers. So even the security industry and what you could call the security state becomes almost indistinguishable. They work so close together in kind of, you know, trying to sell their product, basically.
Well, it was a Republican president and former general, after all, who coined the phrase military-industrial complex. So so we have that. But, Kyle, I mean, I think before we're going to continue this part of the conversation, but we should draw back and point out that there are other applications as well that you're working on. So you talked about the agricultural application. What are some of the other private industrial ways that these can be used that are neither military nor agricultural?
Well, we're also looking at wildlife management. I was meeting with North Carolina Department of Wildlife earlier this week. The ability to do civil engineering, GIS right now, Geographic Information Services, is a big, big market, big data sets. If you're going to do any kind of commercial development of an area, you need to understand what the wetlands are, what that area looks like. And aerial imagery is the way to do that. Right now, civil engineering firms will rent aerial survey airplanes to do this, and it costs them hundreds of thousands of dollars a year to capture that kind of data. So we're working with civil engineering firms that look at mining operations. How do you keep up with how a mine is doing? Sheriff's Department in Mesa County, Colorado, has been flying these for quite a while. Last week, they were on the Senate Judiciary hearing, and they talked about the best application they've done was 2 weeks ago. They flew over the local landfill. They have to do this annual process anyways to see how's the landfill looking. Normally, it's a $10,000 cost to bring on a big manned airplane with the big manned cameras. They did it with their small UAV, and it cost them $200. And they got the same 3D imagery, the same progress on how's that landfill progressing. So there are these kinds of applications that that aren't, I would say, privacy concerns, but they do bring it forward and say, how can we use the technology?
Sarah Preston, what at the ACLU? What are the challenges in trying to formulate regulations? Do you, when you think about all of the applications that the raw technology can bring, and the ways it can be used and perhaps misused, do you look at simply, you know, regulating how the technology is used, or do you have to get down into the weeds a little bit and regulate the development of the technology? How does it work for you on the legal side?
I think you have to be mindful of the development of the technology. I mean, you don't want to craft language in a bill that is so narrow that as the technology develops it will no longer be applicable to the new technology, or prevent the technology from being used in ways that might be legitimate purposes, but that still, you know, protects the sort of constitutional guidelines that, that Americans value. So we, in a sense, you have to be very careful with your language, but you also kind of have to be broad enough that you're capturing whatever might develop next.
And I would guess not write language that is that has a chilling effect on academic freedom and academic research, Sarah.
Right. You don't necessarily want to shut down the development of the technology. I don't think that's, certainly that's not the, the goal with the bill that's been introduced here. I don't think that's the goal of anyone who's working on it. It's just to try and figure out a way to protect privacy rights while still allowing the legitimate uses for the technology.
And Tyler Wall, you've written about the fact that it's not simply the technology, that there are systems in place, particularly enforcement systems, and we've got an ample record of abuses within those systems that, that suggest that, you know, we need to maybe think more deeply about those agencies even as we think about their new technologies.
Yeah, I'm thinking specifically on the issue of weaponization. You know, most of the talk has been on privacy issues, but, you know, there's already development, already rumblings and whatnot about the weaponization of police drones through less than lethal technology. And we, you know, we have to ask questions about, you know, in this question about development and research, but, you know, maybe putting certain restrictions on what can be developed and certain applications.
Well, particularly when you can shoot quickly and out of harm's way, racial profiling is still a very important problem and a very real problem in police agencies all across this country. More and more evidence now just in New York City. It comes out every day. So this is something that which has nothing to do with unmanned aerial technology, but it does suggest that the more technology in the hands of agencies that haven't quite gotten a grip on these fundamental problems, I mean, I think that's part of what you're getting at, Tyler?
Yeah. I mean, SWAT teams, we know, are not deployed equally across the social spectrum. And so, you know, we have to ask the question about drones, how will they actually be used? What communities will they actually be observing, you know, the most? It's what I tell my intro to criminal justice students, you know, when you see the police car that says to protect and to serve, you have to ask the question, it's a critical question, but you have to ask the question of who's actually being protected, who's being served, whose interests are being served, who gets over-policed, who gets under-policed. And that's a question, a fundamental question that we have to ask in relationship to drones.
Sarah Preston, at the ACLU, again, yeah, I guess this question is you know, does this open, this new technology open these deeper questions, or do they remain separate? And I have another question for you. You know, here's Kyle working at a public agency where everything is transparent, developing this technology, but it will get into the hands of secret agencies, the CIA, the FBI, who can keep this stuff under wraps. I mean, is that a concern? And do we have the control now and accountability to regulate what happens when they go under the cloak?
Well, I think a lot of this is done in secret. That's part of why we do these massive public records requests periodically, where we're sending out requests to dozens of agencies. And frankly, that particular request was part of a national effort. So that happened nationwide with ACLUs all over the country trying to find out information about how this is being deployed nationwide, as well as specifically in North Carolina. And I think, you know, one of the biggest fears for any technology use is mission creep. We see it all the time with government agencies where they have a specific mission or directive, but they start sort of creeping into other areas of enforcement or using their technology for things that were not what they were originally acquired for. So certainly it's a huge concern, and I think it's part of why, you know, having good government oversight is incredibly important.
And Kyle, what we haven't talked about yet is just the overall safety of these systems and how they compare to piloted flight and the kinds of development you're working on in that regard.
And that's a big area for growth. We've got to do a lot of research still. And that's why the FAA is looking at establishing the 6 test sites around the country. That's why we are doing the flights we're doing over on the coast of North Carolina around the Hyde County Airport. These are big places we can safely develop reliable technology and figure out really what are those safety levels that are appropriate for commercial and civil integration.
I want to thank you all for being on the program. Kyle Snyder is director of the Next Gen Air Transportation Center. That's at NC State. Sarah Preston is policy director with the American Civil Liberties Union of North Carolina. Tyler Wall, assistant professor in the School of Justice Studies at Eastern Kentucky University. Thank all of you for being on the program.
Thank you, Frank.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up, eating disorders may be far more prevalent than we realize. A new book called Midlife Eating Disorders, just ahead on The State of Things.